And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rexrode. Joe Rexrode here again on microphone one with Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic. How are you guys? Adam, how are you?
I'm good. I heard a certain someone say yesterday that he was concerned about our partnership because he thought we would be quote-unquote low energy. So I'm trying to bring the energy today because apparently I'm low energy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Was he saying you were low energy or me on mic one is low energy? Or
I think the combination, because we're both pretty even keeled guys that don't get hysterical about too many things. All I'll say is that, you know, when you have a 11-month-old, and you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be here, you try having a lot of energy.
That's a fair point.
That is fair. Yeah.
But we'll talk to said individual at 7 o'clock, and we'll hear more about it then, I'm sure.
That's right, we will. That's a good call. Do a rundown. But Michelle, how are you?
Guys, I watched the first episode of Hard Knocks last night. Oh my gosh, Dan Campbell is freaking hilarious. It was absolutely incredible. Joe, I might be a Lions fan now just after watching episode one. It was absolutely incredible.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
No, but it was awesome. It was so awesome.
Joe can tell how devastating an existence being a Lions fan is.
Restore the roar, baby.
Your kids aren't Lions fans, right?
They have. Wow, this has been a topic on the show a fair amount. I would say there's, you know, it's been a parental mission, and I guess I've failed, that's not the only thing I failed at. Just get ready, Adam. Just get ready for years of failure as a parent. It's pretty much guaranteed for all of us. But my middle child, Brennan, just love them. But look, I was the same way as a kid, and I tried hard to dissuade him from rooting for them. Now, when we moved to Nashville, I think he has become a Titans fan, but there's still he still gets, you know, sucked in, like, ooh, I like the receiving core this year, and I think they're underrating us. So, like, don't be a Lions fan. I can't totally break him of it. So it's always there. I mean, again, they have great uniforms. Love the logo. Had some great players. I think if you're a Lions fan like that, Michelle, like almost like tongue in cheek, then I think it's okay.
Well, kinda, yeah, it's fun. Not my kinda heart have fun and soul. With it. It's not my heart and soul, but I mean, you can just not root for Dan Campbell, just screaming and almost crying in just everyday practice because he's so passionate.
I'm not worried about Arlo, by the way. He's already got plenty of Duke paraphernalia, including some of my own baby paraphernalia that was handed down from me to him, including his 1991 Final Four T-shirt that he was wearing yesterday. That my dad got for me when he went to the Final Four in 1991. So, not concerned
when
about
it was
that.
actually like new. Yeah.
Yes, that was the first championship, of course.
Oh, I know. I remember, you know, Duke was like actually the you know, underdog that we all rooted for to beat the evil empire of UNLV. You know, I actually that was an incredible semifinal against UNLV. But yes, quickly we all learned to hate them. I have no doubt that you will brainwash Arlo effectively.
And then naturally he'll become a Kentucky fan. It'll all be right in the world.
He'll have no reason to become a Kentucky fan.
If Michelle, you know, if like
that's why Michelle wasn't invited to Arlo's birthday party.
Oh, how dare.
Oh my goodness! I was gonna say, like, maybe a little babysitting, a little a little brainwashing the other way. You never know. Speaking of kids, definite shout out to Nolensville. Little League baseball team that has made the College World Series. Some classmates,
the Little League
my
World
youngest.
Series, not the College World Series.
Yeah. Oh, did I say? Oh my gosh! I said college. I'm so sorry. 6-0-5.
That would be impressive if the Nolensville Little League team qualified for the College World Series.
Right? And like this far in advance, you know?
Some,
just like
that's lock some sand, up a bid. That's some Sandlot Angels in the Outfield type of thing going on right there.
Yeah, shout out to them. Some kids we know, and love the uniforms. It is interesting. Like those Vanderbilt inspired uniforms are pretty sweet.
Well, they defeated, if I recall correctly,
second year in a row, and
they defeated the Loudoun County team. Does that are you torn? You, I mean, you were, you spent some time in Northern Virginia. Did you live in Loudoun County?
I did not. I lived in Prince William County.
Okay. So no allegiance there. So you weren't being torn.
So no, I wasn't really torn.
So there you go.
No,
shout out to Nolensville.
Now, you know,
go get him.
Shout out to Nolensville. Actually, Paul Skirbina's got a nice piece on the Tennessean about this. Writing about this town of nearly 14,000 nestled nearly 24 miles outside of Nashville. That is
nestled.
That's
a good word.
Nestled is a very good word. It's a very good word. But yeah, they, fun to watch. Heck of a comeback. It's going to be fun this year. This weekend, of course, to see how they do. It's pretty cool, man. Pretty cool to see these kids have this opportunity. So. And of course, so we had the coach, Chase Willie and D Mace, this week too. And he was really good. So that's fun. That's exciting in the state of Tennessee. Also fun and exciting Titans preseason game tonight. I think that's fun and exciting, for whatever it's worth, we're going to get to watch the Tennessee Titans play some football tonight.
Yes, and your mileage may vary on how excited you are about a preseason game, but similar to what Paul Kaharski said with us yesterday morning, you know, it's one thing to watch a preseason game that your team is involved in versus just a random preseason game that happens to be on national television. Although preseason games in general aren't particularly exciting, it will be fun to watch the young Titans, because although we don't know exactly who's going to play, we know that none of the principals will play in this game, and we'll get to that. Although, and another thing we'll get to later, Matt Ryan going to play in the Colts preseason opener, which is interesting. I wonder the last time Matt Ryan played in a first preseason game in his career. It's probably been a minute. Did we lose Joe already?
Joe, you muted
yourself? No, I freaking muted. I've already got a mute. Have I had a mute this week?
I think you had one yesterday, but you've actually been pretty good at not muting yourself.
Yeah, I've been good. But this is the segment to get everything out of the way.
Yes.
So that we can have a smooth show. But, yeah, that is interesting about Matt Ryan. I don't know the answer. There are still some coaches out there who still have the philosophy of, some work for the starters, although that seems to be rapidly fading. You know, it's a copycat league. It's a copycat world, and there isn't much of that. So I did find that interesting, that Frank Reich is going that way. I'll tip the cap to Frank Reich. I would say he's probably a bit of an overrated coach, or has been at least, just based on performance. But hey, for the fans, that's good for him. For the Titans, like you said, we're gonna have Jared Stillman on at 7. We're also gonna have Mike Herndon on at 8 for a second straight week. Mike Herndon writing columns for PaulKaharski.com does really good stuff. It's gonna be very football heavy today. But Jared and I were talking yesterday in a poorly judged win for him over me and Jared versus Joe, he really believes, Treylon Burks, Caleb Farley, all these guys are gonna get, I guess, significant action. I don't know if I buy that or not. I hope so. I hope we get to see guys like that play a significant amount in this game, That's going to be interesting with Vrabel to see what he does there. You know, like last year, got rookies like Rashad Weaver played a ton in the preseason opener. I mean, Dylan Raiden's played a ton as well. And by the way, didn't look all that bad. So you gotta remember it's a preseason game. But it's not like he doesn't play rookies in these. So I would assume we'll see some of those guys. And then you know we know who we won't see. I mean, I'd say Henry, Tannehill, Byard, Simmons, Hooker. Then it's like, okay, is Long, Cunningham? I mean, that'll be really interesting.
Is there a requirement for veterans to play? Because I know in the NHL there is a threshold for how many veteran players there is a requirement in terms of veteran players dressing for preseason games. Is that a rule in the NFL?
No, there's none of that. And again, some of these guys, Vrabel's asked this week about traveling. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised even if we don't even see like Derrick Henry, Tannehill, some of those guys on the sideline. Like, guys, just relax. And relax with your families. We'll see you Friday. So, but that said, there's still going to be plenty to watch, plenty of interest there. So that's largely the show today. So we're going to get into that, what we expect, talk about the Titans. But in the 6 hour, we've started a little, a little bit of a tradition, talking some hockey with Adam Vingan. We're going to do that next. Get into the decor of the Preds and really just how much different/better we think that might be this season. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road. And if you want to get involved, the text and phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Joe Rex Showed, Adam Vingan here for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, and some Preds talk here, Adam. Because, you and I just haven't really been able to thoroughly digest and discuss all that went on in the offseason. And I wanted to get your thoughts on what you think this decor is going to look like. Earlier this week, we've talked. I just feel like, there's some young guys who are going to be talked about a lot. They were talked about a lot last season, in the offseason, when maybe I thought one or both could get moved in some kind of deal if it worked out. And now we go to the decor. And first of all, let's get to Ryan McDonagh and how much of a difference at this stage in his career you think he can make for this team?
I think he can make a big difference. He has a fabulous resume. He's been in the league now for 12 years, I think. I think he has played in the playoffs every season of his career, of course, starting with the New York Rangers, where he was the captain, by the way. And then traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning, where he won two Stanley Cups. I think McDonagh absolutely makes this defense better. I think my concern with McDonagh is, how he ages, because those are some hard miles on those proverbial tires. I think I looked this up earlier this summer when the Predators traded for Ryan McDonagh. I think I talked about this with Robbie last month, that I think since McDonagh entered the league in 2010, if I'm not mistaken, he's either fifth or sixth in blocked shots. So he does not play a finesse game. He really is the type of player that is willing to sacrifice his body to help his team win. And his addition, really should help this team settle things on the defensive end, because as we have discussed thoroughly, not just this week but previously, one issue that the Predators faced down the stretch when they were a average team at best was the fact that their defensive zone was a bit sloppy. Let's put it that way. I think McDonough helps that tremendously. You know, the question that I have is, of course, it would be beneficial, I guess you could say, if Ryan McDonough happened to be right-handed, but he's left-handed. So the Predators' top three defensemen, Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan McDonough, are all left-handed. So it will be I will be curious to see how John Hines decides to go about things, because there are a few ways you could go about this. You could, you know, move one of Ryan McDonough or Matthias Ekholm to their offhand, and you could play McDonough and Ekholm together. You could play McDonough with Josi, which would be interesting. Or you could have one on one on a pair. So you would always have one of them on the ice. So Roman Josi and a right-handed partner, Matthias Ekholm and a right-handed partner, Ryan McDonough and a right-handed partner. You know, and that would be interesting too, because you would have one of those three defensemen on the ice at all times. Personally, you know, I think a pair of McDonough and Ekholm would be fascinating, just because, you know, Ekholm has done, I think, an admirable job of shepherding younger players in that role, in that shutdown role, since the Predators traded PK Subban. Last season, it was Alexander Carrier who got the assignment with Ekholm. And I thought Carrier held his own against tough competition. But, you know, I certainly think he could benefit from lighter matchups. And I think if you were to put Ekholm with McDonough, you know, that would be a bona fide shutdown pair. You could also play him with Roman Josi and have sort of a, you know, Shea Weber-esque presence on that pair, in the sense that, you know, McDonough is more of a, you know, stay-at-home defenseman, really no longer exist. There are a few, you know, still around the league, but that, you know, defensemen are a lot more multifaceted now than they were earlier in the salary cap era. So, but I think McDonough's defensive game and Roman's offensive game would complement each other well. So I'll be very curious to see, you know, how it shakes out. But absolutely, McDonough makes this team better defensively. Don't mute yourself, Joe.
What? I got it unmuted. Okay, so what? Those are, you've laid it out well. What would you do? What do you think he will do? And understanding that there's probably going to be some changes, you know, in an 82 game season, but largely the bulk of the season, what do you think he'll do? What would you do?
I think that, you know, John will try to limit the amount of change. So I could see, for example, Dante Fabbro remaining with Roman Josi, because, you know, Dante Fabbro is an interesting case. You know, every team, every iteration of a team, you know, has that polarizing player that the fan base is pretty split on in terms of how they feel about him. You know, Ryan Ellis was absolutely that player near the end of his time here. You know, I was a Ryan Ellis fan. I thought that, you know, his, you know, when he was healthy, and that's the huge caveat, I thought, you know, he certainly helped this team. But on the other hand, you know, his critics absolutely will always remember that play in the Dallas series where he went back to retrieve a puck in the defensive zone and got swatted away like a gnat by Jamie Benn. So there's that. You know, I feel like Dante Fabbro is sort of turning into that player, because I think Dante Fabbro made incremental progress last season. I don't think he was head and shoulders better than he was the season before, but I do think he improved. And I think, you know, playing with Roman Josi certainly helps in that regard. You know, I would not be surprised if those two stayed the same and you had McDonough and Ekholm together, and then that would make that third pair one of Jeremy Lauzon or Mark Borowiecki and Alexander Carrier on a third pair. You know, I like the idea. I like the sound of that. You know, things can change, but, you know, I really like the idea of Ekholm and McDonough together. I think that is, you know, they're both big, they're both experienced, they're both defensively responsible. You know, I think that is a pair that, you know, could remind Predators fans of the Ekholm-Subban pairing that was so, so good for a couple of years.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I find that to be a very intriguing possibility. I don't know. I feel like it should be Josi Carrier if that's the way it goes, and then, you know, Fabro in a true like third pairing situation at least to start. I mean,
that's fair.
You know, but. It's the same kind of thing. What are we talking about here? We're talking about a 24-year-old,
yes.
Who if you do go season by season, you know, unlike Tolvanen, who had his best stretch with the Preds in the 2020-21 season, you know, Fabro definitely, like you said, there was progress. So you think about his 2020-21 season, you know, he couldn't stay in the lineup, right? So. So there was progress. It's just that, yeah, I think maybe the expectations get a little bit inflated early, with how much poise, and maturity he showed right out of college. Right. And, you know, in that playoff series. But I don't know. I don't know where things are going for him. I think he's, again, one of those guys who the vision for him a few years ago, and not just with the fans, let's say just internally. Mm-hmm. The vision for him is a lot different than the reality right now. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I would say so. And you're right. When, you know, he came in, you know, in a pressure situation because the Predators, you know, I think were still battling for the Central Division title at the time
right.
that he came in near the end of that season. Scored a big goal, if I recall correctly, against Chicago in one of the last games of the season. And then I thought was really solid in that Dallas series with Dan Hamhuis as his partner. I think Carrier, you know, it's interesting because Carrier is older than Fabro, though, you know, Fabro has more NHL experience. He was, you know, sort of hot-shotted, if that's the word that I'm looking for, into the NHL. While Carrier spent several years in the American League before, you know, finally cracking the NHL lineup. But I think Carrier, you know, I think Carrier has passed Fabro on my personal depth chart, just because of the experience he had last season playing with Ekholm, and of course a member of the NHL's all rookie team. On defense. So, you know, I know that Josi and Carrier have played together. I don't recall exactly how that went. It would be an interesting combination to be sure. But, you know, I know that you and Robbie have had conversations about, you know, one of them not being on the team next season because they are both pending RFAs next summer. And right now, if I had to choose between the two, I would choose Carrier. But, you know, this is a big season for Dante, absolutely, to show that he can continue to be an important member of the defense.
That it is. And when we come back, another concern with this group that I have that even in our discussion here has come to mind again. On Robbie and Rex, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Road, Adam Bingen in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezovic, talking Preds, talking Defense Corps, and here's a question I have, Adam, that goes a little bit beyond this season. It's been just assumed, it's been a given. Right, that there are promising defensemen coming through the system, that the Preds will likely have a surplus of anything and assets to move, which of course we've seen them do. I look at, as you mentioned last segment, Ryan McDonough, guy, he's logged a lot of miles, a lot of really good miles, but a lot of miles, the way he plays, he's 33. Ekholm, 32. Yossi, 32, coming off an incredible season that probably should have won the Norris. But, there's change coming. And by the way, Mark Borbiesi is also 33. I mean, suddenly become this. They used to be, I think, the consensus best D-Corp, but also still a really young D-Corp. Or, you know, I guess middle-aged in terms of, you know, the prime of your hockey career, mm-hmm. right in that sweet spot. And now they are getting up there a little bit. Your concern level just in terms of the long-term situation on defense for the Preds?
It's a good question, just because there isn't that, to borrow a word from the previous segment, hot shot prospect, defensively that I can think of. Now, there are some solid players. You know, I think of someone like Luke Prokop, for example, who could be, you know, a solid, you know, NHL player one day, but there isn't that can't miss guy like we talked about Roman Yossi so long ago, or Matthias Ekholm, or even more recently, you know, Dante Fabbro in the past couple of years. I mean, look at what happened this summer with David Ferentz. David Ferentz was a very successful college player, and when he signed with the Predators, there was certainly some excitement. You know, got a couple of games with the Predators, but mostly spent his time in the American League, and the Predators chose not to give him a qualifying offer, and that was a bit of a shock. And then he ultimately, if I recall correctly, signed like an AHL-only deal. That's how volatile development can be. We have an opinion of a player, and it changes completely. The thing that I'm not concerned about it immediately, just because I still believe that even though they are older, Yossi, McDonough, and Ekholm are still high-level players, you know, particularly Yossi, in the sense that he is an elite player, and elite players tend to age more gracefully. So I think that even at an age 2 or 3 years from now, when Roman will be in his mid-30s, assuming no injuries, you know, I'm sure he'll still be a high-level player, even at an age when most players are declining considerably. So, you know, there's some concern. I just think that for now, the defensemen, the older defensemen that they have, namely Yossi, McDonough, and Ekholm, you know, I still think are good players, and I don't expect them to drop off a proverbial cliff anytime soon.
No, and I don't think so either. I do wonder how many more seasons like last season Roman Yossi might have in him. And you watch him. Hey, look, we joke on this show about athletic prime, but it is 28 to 32, okay? I mean, that's just, you know, it depends on the sport. I mean, it's not 28 to 32 if you're a gymnast, for example, but like someone like Yossi, he's right there, obviously. Obviously, he's right there at the top of his game. How much longer can you realistically expect that level? I mean, to me, it's probably a couple more seasons of that before you see some kind of decline, but who knows? Like you said, he is different.
Right, and, you know, there are players that there are plenty of examples of players in all sports that, you know, have been able to defy Father Time, as we like to say, just because of their, you know, natural talent level. And Roman, to me, is that kind of player. I mean, none of us are expecting him to have the offensive season that he had last season, just because it's rare for a defenseman to be able to put up so many points in this era. But I still expect him to have an excellent season. He's an excellent player. And Yeah, I think, you know, as long as he stays healthy, you know, I still think you can get at least two, if not three more high-level seasons like we've seen in recent years from Roman Josi before you really start to think about, you know, the decline.
With Ekholm, does it matter that he produces more offensively? Like, does that, you know, I know he signed a deal. We know what he is. He's an excellent all-around player. But, you know, there have been times when you've seen some stretches from him. You know, I mean, he can do things offensively. He didn't have a lot of production last year. How much does that matter?
I think it certainly helps. I mean, I'm looking at his career, you know, production season by season. He had 31 points last year, 25 assists. In 1920, he had 33 points in 68 games. He had 44 points in 1819. You know, scored 10 goals in 17-18. So, you know, so usually Ekholm is good for about 30 points a season. You know, he has that skill set. I think it's a luxury if you can get points from Matias Ekholm. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary, especially when you have someone, you know, like Roman Josi on your team. I mean, you know, McDonough is similar. You know, McDonough, you know, last season he had 26 points. He had 46 points in 18-19, 9 goals, 37 assists. You know, if you can get that level of production from McDonough, that's certainly a luxury too. It's not front of mind for me with Ekholm. For Ekholm, it's important for him to be that defenseman that when the other team's top line comes out, that he's the guy that's going on the ice and doing a good job of shutting them down. So if he gets points, that's great. For me, I focus more on the defensive play for him than I do the offensive play.
No question. He did, you know, he got some power play time last year. We've talked a little bit about, you know, that power play too. You know, Niederreiter presumably shakes that up a little bit and presumably for me improves it. What would you do? What would you do with that group? We're assuming, let's just keep that power play one the exact same. I mean, I think you have to, right? I think that's what will happen. They were excellent last year. So how are you reimagining power play two?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, Niederreiter will be a part of that. He's a good net front player. I think you have Elie Tolvanen on that line as a sniper. I think you have either Ekholm or McDonough. I think both of them have power play experience. So you could have one of them on that unit at least. I'd put Philip Tomasino there and sort of the Ryan Johansson half wall kind of role. And then I'm trying to think of who else I would have. Yeah, I mean, you could have someone like Cody Glass if he's on the team. You know, you could have Jeannot as another net front type of guy or Trennan. But I think at least, you know, forward wise, I think Niederreiter's on that unit. I think Tolvanen and Tomasino were on that unit. One of Ekholm or McDonough, you know, or you could have Ekholm and McDonough. Probably not, but.
Probably yeah, not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who else I would. Yeah. I mean, I guess it would have to be, you know, one of the so called herd players, you know, one of Trennan or Jeannot, I guess. Unless I'm obviously missing someone.
Yeah, well, so last year it was Ekholm, Tomasino, Tolvanen. Kunin got a fair amount of time.
Yes.
On power play too. And so obviously he has moved on. I would say, because obviously there's going to be talk as well about Jeannot, especially like if that sixth spot isn't like Tomasino doesn't take it and run, which is possible. Still a young guy, you know, you still can anticipate some ups and downs for him. I think there'll be, you know, some talk about Jeannot moving up, right? But at least maybe more, you know, a bigger role or you know, I guess a bigger role in power play for him. Maybe that's sort of like the trade off. You know, you keep that line together, but maybe Jeannot could really make a difference for that group.
Yeah, I think, you know, Nino Niederreiter, I think, absolutely will help. on the power play. You know, Alex Daugherty had a really good Twitter thread a couple of weeks ago looking at Niederreiter's prowess in front of the net in general and his ability to get there and score, you know, high quality goals in terms of, you know, the expected chance of them going in. You know, I think that's been missing from the Predators lineup consistently. And I think that will help both at even strength and on the power play. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Niederreiter can do on this team. You know, I've been a big fan of his from afar with it during his time in Carolina. I really do think he helps this team. Now, the other conversation that we might have to wrap up this week and tomorrow is, you know, how much better is this team with the additions that they've made? You know, does Niederreiter put them over the top? Probably not, but he absolutely makes them better in the top six. So, you know, he's a player I will be keeping my eye on for sure as the season progresses, because I do think he brings a lot to the table that the Predators did not have in recent seasons.
Good tease for tomorrow. And coming up today, listen to Robbie Rexford of the Hillside Medical Game Studio. We're going to talk best and worst in sports. And welcome in Robbie and Rexrode, Joe Rexrode, Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezevic. I'm so used to Robbie saying, Joe, would you like to start best and worst in sports? So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to flip it around and give it to Michelle. Michelle, would you like to start us this week?
I would love to start us this week, and I'm happy because you always steal mine. So we need to tell Robbie that we got to switch this up a little bit.
And by the way, before you go, I have one that's a runner up for me that would totally be stealing from you. So
I think I know what
we'll
it is,
see.
But that's not my best in sports this week.
Okay.
So we'll start with worst. My worst in sports this week is the fact that Deshaun Watson is starting in the preseason game. I saw that on Twitter yesterday, and that just, you know, pissed me off. I think the Browns organization as a whole, maybe my worst is just the Browns organization. I just think they have done an absolutely awful job just through this entire situation. Like, read the room. The Browns, like, I feel like I have, like, secondhand embarrassment for some of the statements they've made, you know, and now he's playing in the preseason game. And don't get me wrong, I understand, you know, if we're just talking football and you want to get him on the field, but most likely he's not going to play at all this year, and he's going to be suspended for a year, and they're just going to throw him out for the preseason game. And it just pissed me off. I saw that and I was like, you're really going to do that? So that is for sure my worst in sports. And I think we've had Deshaun Watson and the Browns worst in sports a couple different times this year. My best in sports is, I think Joe is going to honorable mention the Kentucky football team that raised a bunch of money for the devastating floods in eastern Kentucky, which they're still trying to build up. But best in sports is Dan Campbell and the first episode of Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it like years ago when it was really, really good. And as of recent, I watched the Colts one a little bit on and off, the in-season one last year, and it was fine. But I watched the first episode last night after seeing Twitter clips of Dan Campbell and Aiden Hutchinson on Twitter. And then I sat down and watched it from start to finish last night. Just awesome. Every bit of it. The whole coaching staff, Dan Campbell, hearing Dan Campbell's story. It's just awesome. And everybody's just having so much fun with it. Even Aiden Hutchinson, too. A guy who doesn't care about, from what it looks like, making fun of himself and singing Billie Jean in front of the whole team. But just Dan Campbell as a whole and the Lions. So restore the roar.
I got to say, I am really excited. We've been holding off because, like, Katie had a work trip. And Caroline and I went to Kill a Mockingbird last night at TPAC. By the way, real quick. Not best in sports, but if you get a chance, go out there. John Boy is playing Atticus Finch. Anybody watch Ozark? You know,
I do.
Yeah, so how far into it are you?
Season 2.
Okay. He hasn't appeared yet, but he's a key player on that show. Tremendous actor. I was like, "Oh my gosh, Atticus Finch." Anyway, so have not been able to get to Hard Knocks, waiting to watch it as a family, and you know, may have to have this coffee mug here, right here, filled for that. But it's I actually think we might have a good Hard Knocks. It's been a while.
Am I up now?
You know what? If you want to go now, I think that's perfect. I go last. I think, yeah, go for it.
Okay, so my worst in sports, it's a sad worst. It's not a bad worst. Yesterday, it was announced by the family of Ben Stelter that he died at age 6 due to cancer. Now, if you're a hockey fan, Ben Stelter was an inspiration to the Edmonton Oilers late in the season and during the playoffs. Ben had, let me see if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, glioblastoma, which is a form of brain cancer. He was diagnosed before his 5th birthday, and unfortunately, he died yesterday, way too young, at age 6. But, you know, he was a big part of the Oilers' season last season and an inspiration to those players and, you know, of course, to the hockey world. So that was sad to see yesterday. So that was my worst in sports, you know. No person, you know, deserves to die at 6 years old with their entire life in front of them. So that hit hard. But speaking of children, the best in sports, and this was a viral moment in the Little League World Series, in a game between Oklahoma and Texas East. You may have seen this. The pitcher from Texas East hit the batter from Oklahoma in the helmet on the pitch. That clearly got away from him, and the pitcher was visibly distraught after hitting the batter. The batter was able to get to first base, and before play continued, he called timeout, walked over to the pitcher, gave him a hug, and told him, quote, "Hey, you're doing just great." And these are opponents, by the way, in a Little League World Series. So, you know, it's nice to see A, sportsmanship, and B, compassion. It stinks that we have to, you know, it's rare to see these things nowadays. But I was glad to see that it was touching, and kudos to that young man. Isaiah Jarvis is his name. The batter who decided to console the pitcher who hit him in the head on accident, of course. So that was my best in sports.
That's a great call on your part. Yeah, I saw. I mean, the pitch. I mean, that was a whoo. You know, got away. You know, it was, you know, I mean, that was scary, and you're shaken by that as a kid. That was really cool. Well, that goes into my best, which is absolutely mentioned it earlier, but Nolensville, an absolute dynasty at this point, beating Loudon. Getting to the Little League World Series, not the College World Series, as I said earlier. So congrats to them. It's very exciting. When Lane Dever crossed with what turned out to be the winning run, there was much screaming and rejoicing in my household the other day. Kind of crazy to see these kids playing on ESPN. So really fantastic stuff. My worst. Well, first of all, I have a runner-up for best. A lot of times I have, you know, consolation prizes. My runner-up is that the Detroit Tigers have fired GM Al Avila, finally. Just astoundingly bad tenure as GM. A big part of that franchise going absolutely nowhere in the past few years. So, good job, finally. And my worst is Serena Williams. Although we knew it was coming, it's not like some huge surprise. Maybe it's also for me, it's just like Serena Williams still playing at a high level, having this astounding career. I guess maybe for someone of my age, it's like, wow, like she was great. Like I was in, you know, like college when she started doing this stuff. I mean, and so it's like, it's kind of like keeps you young. when Serena Williams keeps going with this just incredible career. She's one of the all-time greats. And on any list you want to have of athletes in America, worldwide, whatever you want to do, she's right at the top of that list.
No doubt. And, I am a casual tennis watcher. I am a major watcher. So I was already planning on tuning into the U.S. Open, but absolutely now Serena's matches will be appointment television because every match could be the last.
Yeah. Speaking of my age, I still remember like Jimmy Connors, early 90s, he had like this crazy run at the U.S. Open. I mean, he was well past his prime. He was about at the end there. Of his career, and I remember how special that was, and I'm hoping we get something similar there. When we come back, speaking of something special, Jared Stillman,
Nashville's biggest Bobo.